buy this rep note for, say, you know, for $150. If this number is 150 and the rep is 300, and you give that person 150, 175 grand, and they have a $300,000 rep note on it, and you buy that for $300,000 note for 175, give them 25 grand in their pockets, pay off that first. You just bought a $300,000 first lien for $175.
You pay back everything that the buyer has paid you, and you get the property back with some fines associated with it. That's a Deceptive Trade Practices Act violation, which now brings you up to 3x damages.
As always, subscribe and click the notification bell on our YouTube channel. Be active on our Facebook group, East Coast Distressed Note Investing. And be sure to go to our website for all your note investing tools, resources, and available assets. If you have any questions, email us at tradedesk@jkpholdings.com.
Hey everyone, Dave Putz from JKP Holdings. Alongside me, as always, Mr. Nathan Turner. Good afternoon, Nathan. How have you been, bud?
Hello, very good, very good.
Oh, it's been fun. It's been a busy, busy week for me. How you been? What's been new with you?
You know what? I just realized this last week, this is 1 year since we moved, and I think we're finally getting our feet under ourselves. And goodness. Yeah, it's been quite a thing. But yeah, no, it's been good. It's been a good week. Lots of stuff going on. Got some interesting opportunities coming up. We'll talk maybe offline about some different things, but it looks good.
I like it, man. It's been a whirlwind of a week for me. We got a bunch of stuff going on, juggling some stuff personally. And then we're going away next week. And then we're dealing with about 6 or 7 deals that are kind of floating around and my mind being crazy. So plus doing some social media marketing, and it's been nuts. It's been fun though. And I'm looking forward to relaxing for a few minutes, sitting down and just unplugging. So
yeah,
it's going to be fun. So good. We have a lot of new people joining us. For those who don't know, we've been running a webinar for 2 years, 3 years now, whatever it is now.
Yeah, 3 years, I think.
Yeah. So it's been fun, right? It's been a joy. I think people really appreciate the information that we provide and what we do for people. But we also have been on a journey this year where we've been looking for people to merge with us as note buyers, to merge with us as note originators, note, you know, those kind of things. Everything to do with that kind of stuff is, as note buyers, we've been buying bank originated notes for 13 years now plus.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we've recently found that we're moving towards that seller finance world. So we're really engaging with all these people out there who are doing owner finance, subject to, and some people don't even know this, when they sell that subject to, they can write a wrap note. And I recently ran into someone who didn't know what wrap note was and had a bunch of them. So it's really interesting. What we wanted to do is really kind of bridge that gap. We keep saying over and over again, and I feel free to, those who are new to us, go back and check out our YouTube channel, our videos, and our website, and the Facebook page. What has been your overall in this 8-month journey we've been in? What are your thoughts right now?
I've been astounded. It's been very, very interesting. The biggest revelation, one of the biggest revelations, is to figure out that note creators have no idea that note buyers exist. And to me, that blew my mind, because I'm like, wait, what? We can do so much business together.
Yeah.
Part of what we're doing is educating those who are creating notes how to do it in a way that makes it a very marketable note. Yes. How to make it something that is very attractive to us as note buyers. So that's been part of our push, and part of our you know, goal is educating people on how to do that in a way that will make that a sellable note.
So I did recently a video, we published it this week, about what makes a note valuable, right? And what makes it so they can get the most money for it. But we've really been focused on making sure that it's created correctly first, because you can have the great numbers in the world, but how you structure it is big. So those people who are looking to structure a note, but also looking to possibly sell it. Now, Nathan, give me an idea of why someone would want to sell a note. What's the advantage of selling a note just hold it for 30 years?
And you totally can. And then maybe a life event comes up and you think, oh shoot, I need a lump sum of cash right now. Or you're just tired of it, or you've got a different opportunity that you can invest money into, or, you know, who knows, there's all kinds of reasons why you might want money today versus stretched out over the next 30 years. And that's where we come in. That's where we are there to say, you know what, I'll give you that lump sum of cash. Yeah. And if you've created it in a way that makes it very attractive to me, I don't have to give you very much of a discount. I can pay a top dollar for that, and we can all make more money in the long run. So
yeah,
that's a big push for us.
What we've recently found out too is that people are creating these wrap notes and the 72s or owner finance, and they have a ton of equity stuck in it.
Yeah.
And what they don't realize is that they don't have to sell that note. They want to keep it, right? And in our past webinars, we've been talking about hypothecations, where you literally lend money, you borrow money and use your note as collateral. Mm-hmm. Nothing changes the note, you know, and we're going to be doing a webinar next on some that we actually recently did a hypothecation and a great return, and why it worked for him and how it helped him pull out equity and allowed him to juice it up and gave us the return we're looking for, but gave him the capital to go out and buy more notes. So yeah, that feature is really cool for us.
Right? Yeah, and you've done some of those. I haven't done those yet. Yeah. So I'm curious to see what you've done and how you've done it.
Yeah.
See if that's something I want to incorporate as well.
Yeah, it's been a really cool thing for us. And I think for us, we're trying to learn more about this world of subject twos, owner yeah, finance, wrap notes. And we've done a lot. We wanted to get the experts on that kind of give us the information. And as yeah, most people know, we do webinars to learn and then share with you guys. So we don't know the answers to these questions we're going to ask.
Yeah.
Right?
These are legitimate questions.
Yeah. So this recording will be found on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, my website and everything else. So feel free to look at that and get information. I'll put the website we have too. So we have a bunch of people tuning in. This is awesome, guys. Post your comments, questions. We're streaming live on LinkedIn, Twitter, I think Instagram and Facebook Live as well. So let's bring in our guest speaker for today. Alan, it's been a pleasure. It's been a long time coming. We booked this with you for a while. Welcome.
I appreciate it. Really glad to be here. That what y'all are doing and what y'all are talking about has really kind of come around for me. And I think in Texas past 18, 24 months or so. And y'all are causing some disruption to us, changing the way that these wraps are structured sometimes. So it's been fun yeah, learning.
Yeah. And that's what the key is right now, right? We're learning from you while you're learning from us. Yeah. Right. What is important to a note buyer? What is why do we need certain things? Right.
You're coming with an attorney's background, so you've got a bit of a different spin on this as well. And so that's part of why we wanted to have you on.
Yeah. My focus is going to be compliance with laws and protection of parties, while y'all are over there in the how do we make this note as marketable as possible. Like you said, life events occur. We have not been historically making the notes marketable, but now we're changing that.
Well, the legality of it actually makes a big difference for us. So we very much appreciate that that angle of it. I know there are some people out there teaching subject twos and creative finance, but they're not going through and teaching the legalities behind it. And so we want to promote the legal way of doing it because not just because it's legal, but because honestly, it makes it more attractive for us.
So
that is automatically, that becomes a more marketable note.
When it's 100%. Done. So let's back up for a second, right? How'd you get started with what you do? How'd you get involved in the real estate world? Give us a little bit of background.
So in terms of the title work, I just had, you know, I was a construction litigation attorney and I had clients who said, hey, you should close our deals for us when we purchase. And I kind of said, we don't do that. I saw a couple of settlement statements and these $2-3 million houses being sold. I said, oh, we do closings now. And so got started back in 03, 04. And then the recession, 07, 08 hit. And that drove us all to seller finance transactions, which then drove us to wraps, sub twos. And so I stayed in that area. When the market came back, all the other title offices moved out and went back to the retail, conventional, you know, end user buyer, end user seller transactions. I just stayed in the mortgage wrap world, really to be ready for another event. And then I didn't know that those events were going to be different than recessions. They were going to be COVID events. They were going to be mortgage rate increase events. And so we were lucky that we kind of positioned ourselves and were ready for that. So that's how I got involved. And now I just call myself a wrap nerd, and I talk with anyone and everyone about mortgage wraps.
Yeah. That's awesome. Awesome stuff.
That's really cool.
So we got a bunch of questions in here. I really appreciate the questions. We're going to get into those questions in a few minutes. So feel free to post them. I'm able to actually trigger it and bring it into the feed, which is really cool. New feature I got going on here.
Yeah, so, they've been flying in already. This is interesting.
This is awesome, guys. I appreciate you guys jumping in here. So we wanted to back up. Can you define the word subject to?
Yeah, and it'll end up being a little bit different than what folks are maybe learning out there, but subject to means I'm going to take over that mortgage. I'm taking the property subject to the mortgage. There's confusion out there that, hey, I'm taking the subject to, I'm not assuming the mortgage, and I'm trying to dispel that or change that thinking. You are assuming the mortgage. It's just a non-qualified assumption. The lender's not approving you, but you are taking over all of the terms and conditions of that mortgage. You have to pay that mortgage. So you're assuming the responsibility, not assuming in terms of a lender saying, all right, you're approved. There's a qualified assumption. So a sub two, and that's usually your acquisition method. I'm taking over this note, paying a little bit of equity, sometimes no equity, over to the seller. And now you're in control of that mortgage as if you were the one that applied for it, and you're fully controlling that mortgage. Seller is out. So that's my long definition of it.
That's awesome.
And why would somebody want to do that? Why would somebody living in the house want to allow you to take over their existing mortgage?
So if it was a year ago, my answer would have simply been there's some type of event going on. They're in foreclosure. Heirs have inherited the property, don't really know what's going on. Someone's just an extremely motivated seller. They can't sell their house otherwise. Open it up to seller finance. You have a bigger market, a bigger pool of buyers. That would have been my answer, and we would have stopped there. But now folks are getting pretty darn smart. They've got themselves a 2.5% interest rate on their mortgage. They're trying to now monetize that, go out there and sell it for, you know, 6 to 9, 10% and cash flow that. So I used to get, you know, a call every month or every other month about someone trying to monetize their mortgage interest rate. Now it's weekly, multiple weekly. You've got these people saying, hey, is there any way for me to, you know, try to sell this property? They don't know about mortgage wraps. They don't know about anything. Mm-hmm. And so now they're trying to monetize their 2.5, their 3% interest rates.
Awesome.
Interesting.
Oh. It's so cool. So wrap notes. I've run to a few people, and one's actually on the call now. Never heard this word wrap note. How would you define wrap note?
So my definition of mortgage wrap, I try to simplify it, is just seller financing of a property. And by the way, we don't pay off the mortgage, but it is seller financing. So in a seller finance transaction, you're drafting up a note that the buyer now owes over to the seller. You're drafting up a deed of trust. Your warranty deed has a vendor's lien in there, since there's a mortgage being created. So your wrap note, and Texas just passed a bit of legislation in regard to managing or governing how wrap mortgages, wrap notes are dealt with. But it's just simply a seller finance note that acts the same as a Wells Fargo or Bank of America note. Has all the protections. We try to mimic a standard transaction in our wraps or sub twos to just make it more legitimized, I guess, more protected in the event that there's any kind of problem. So it's just a seller finance note.
Gotcha. So when we talk about these things, we're looking to buy that wrap note, right? Or lend money against that wrap note where you own the note. You can do as you want with it. You can sell it. You can sell partial on it. You can borrow against it. We call hypothecation. If you want to learn more, I actually have an FAQ and take a look at the past webinars. But can you talk just briefly about these kind of things? Can you legally sell that note to a note buyer?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's where you get into looking at, all right, was it closed via RMLO and disclosures? Did it comply with Dodd-Frank, comply with state laws, comply with SAFE Act? And you know, if you're in the business, like for instance, we mentioned Nick before we got started there, yeah. The fella does hundreds and hundreds of these things.
Shout out to Nick Ligamaro.
Yeah. He never does not use an RMLO. While an investor isn't necessarily thinking about selling a note, so they're trying to decide, all right, should I use an RMLO? I'm actually going to post on our sites today when we're finished up about making your note sellable, even if you don't have that as an exit strategy, because just in case. Yeah. And then when I mentioned earlier, y'all were causing some trouble. What happened is these folks who know that they want to possibly sell the equity portion of a note that they have, they've bifurcated or dissected a mortgage wrap into now a sub two acquisition with a seller finance carryback, so that they can sell the seller finance carryback or sell the sub two portion. And so I had to acquiesce these people who were dissecting mortgage wraps. And at first I didn't understand the benefit of it, but if you're going to sell a note, it's better to dissect them into two different notes.
So when we're talking about there is that you can do an 80-20 loan, right? You can do an 80 loan, a 20% loan instead of doing 100% sale. So just kind of realize that kind of portion of it. So we're talking about these kind of things and we have been talking, let's go to some of the questions first before we dive into some stuff. Is the attractiveness of the note subject or the standard of a note buyer want to make a note more attractive? So I did a webinar on a video on this. We've talked about it before. The biggest features of making a note valuable is making sure that collateral file is secure. What does that mean? We talked about an RMLO. If you are selling this property to an occupied borrower, someone who is borrowing money from you to occupy the property, you have to go through the RMLO, underwrite, make sure they have the ability to repay. And when they do that, then it becomes a qualified mortgage so that note buyers can buy it. And then the attorneys and judges can't fight you on creating a note and make sure you use the RMLO to do all that kind of packet, right? The next point is, yeah, go ahead, Nathan.
I was just going to say in the RMLO, so first of all, registered mortgage loan originator is what that stands for, registered or I don't know, some other R word, but anyway, mortgage loan originator. That all came out because of the last crash. So all those laws, SAFE Act, Dodd-Frank, stuff you'll hear us talking about, all that kind of came into existence 2012, 2013. So it's been a law now for over 10 years, and it has not been very closely adhered to, I would say, generally. But it's being more and more put under the microscope. It's becoming more and more important to make sure that you're doing it correctly and going through the proper channels. So all that being said, that is one of the biggest reasons that we are very concerned about that. If you're not using an RMLO, it's not necessarily a deal breaker for me in particular, but I will probably have to discount that more because I'm going to have to go and fix it. I am going to have to go through and redo some things to make sure that it is 100% compliant and that it's falling under the correct rules and laws that are out there. So that's number one, making sure that it's done properly so that I don't have extra work to do, so that it's legal and it's compliant and everybody's satisfied on that level.
I like it. That was awesome, Nathan. So the second parts are the numbers, right? guys, you're enriching your notes, and note buyers, please chime in here, right? You have a big form of people buying and creating notes. We don't want to see a situation where the note rate of the borrower is at 4, 5, 6%. That's not good, right? Because the fact that the rate affects how we can buy it. If we're looking at a note that we need to create, and that note is written at a 6%, and we are going forward and trying to buy it at a 12, it doesn't work, right? What happens is that we try to discount it to get the interest rate higher, and it affects us tremendously. So you make sure that the rate of that note is high enough, right? High enough, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Get it above a 12, because I promise you, we have a chart that if you look at our website and go to our facts, you'll see a chart that shows that if you write the thing at an 8 and we're looking for a 13, the discount you can expect. The second part of that is the term. The lower the term, the better it is. With all that said, you're going to make sure the borrower can qualify, right? Make sure that the ability to pay is there. So, Alan, when you're creating notes and you're suggesting that people do these kind of things, is it feasible to, what do you tell people when they find a borrower that isn't able to afford a note that's sellable? What do you tell them to do?
Now, when you say, you said not when it's not separable?
Sellable, meaning the fact that, you know, hey, listen, I have to rate a 5 because the payment for the borrower doesn't work out, right? They can't afford a 10. What do you suggest to people who are writing a 4%, 5% note just to make the borrower happy?
You know, for me, I think it boils down, at least the files that we work with, you kind of have two different buyers. You got a buyer who is, seller finance is fine. I don't have to necessarily. I want to try to avoid that 6.5 or whatever we're at these days. And then you have another borrower who, for some reason or another, can't get a conventional mortgage. And that's when we start having our interest rates up there between 8 and 12. But if their reason for not being able to get a conventional mortgage is they don't have an ability to repay, then we're back down to a problem of that note getting in place in the first place. I don't like seeing someone who's in that ability to repay problem area signing off on a 12-13% note. So there's all kinds of things that can create a situation where you're not able to get a conventional mortgage, and those are the ones that we see up there at the not 9 to 12 or so. I don't like seeing much above 12. It seems like it just hurts people.
Yeah, and we have to worry about, and I keep saying the word wrong, usury law. How do you pronounce usury? I call it usury.
Yeah, it's usury. It's usury, okay. And each state may have different regulations, or will have different regulations.
And what that means is the cap of what the interest rate can be. You can go above it, but there's some things you have. If you do, you have to qualify and some of that. But you have to make sure that you stay below that majority of the time. So. Your Armalo knows this stuff and can work with that, and your attorney can work with that. It all based on what state you're in.
Yeah, and the Armalo, we have two different kinds of Armalos. An Armalo that will come back and say, no, you can't do this, versus an Armalo that comes back and says, hey, here's our data on this, and the seller lender makes a decision on them. And unfortunately, Dodd-Frank is not exact. It says you need to look at debt to income ratios. It doesn't give you the exact numbers. It says you need to look at, you know, 8 different items of ability to repay, but doesn't give you specifics on that. It's good though. It allows you some area to come in and say, all right, well, this person has, you know, substantial income flow, but not a lot of savings, or this person has a ton of savings, but not income flow, and start making your decisions.
Yep. So one of the questions we got before the webinar was from Ryan Bedford, was how do you avoid the due on sale clause? And along with the lines, what causes, the question, what clauses do we need inside the paper to hold up on legal action? So explain what due on sale means, and then how do you suggest avoiding that error?
Issue. Yeah.
So due on sale clause is simply just the permissive right of the lender to say, hey, the entire note is now due, the entire mortgage is now due because you sold our collateral. And when you say that, obviously in a mortgage wrap sub two, you're selling their collateral. And so my daughter actually works at my office part-time. And so she came across this due on sale clause and she knew we were closing all these mortgage wraps and such. And so she came in just, you know, confused face, said, well, how do we do this? Because there's this due on sale clause. And so it sounds substantive. It sounds like a deal killer. The issue is, I haven't done a count lately, but at one point in time, we had three situations where a lender called the note due out of more than 8,000 transactions. So I did the math on that. It's point a lot of zeros percent. So it's in my world, it's a non-issue. You cannot prevent it. People talk about land trusts, things of that nature. That may confuse a mortgage company. Doesn't necessarily avoid it under the federal act, Garn St. Germain Act. So there is no way to 100% avoid it. However, the fix is relatively simple. If it occurs, we do a little cat and mouse game. We deed the property back. Now we're in compliance and then deed it right back to the buyer. That's happened on three occasions, like I said, and it worked perfectly each time. One as long as 10 years ago, and then the other several years ago. But it's just, it doesn't come up. Now, lawyers deal in possibilities, not probabilities. So I have to say, you need to have a plan B. You need to be able to pay off that mortgage. The end buyer may need to sell that. End buyer may need to refinance. But it's for the amount of times that we deal with it, dear Lord, we talk about it a million times more.
So do you put it in any type of entity? And you said not a trust. Do you do anything to protect it, or you just sell it?
You transfer
the deed?
Putting it in an entity doesn't protect you either. Now, we always advise everyone put their investment properties in entities. But the banks don't want properties back. And they're not watching. You know, I think Wells Fargo has 750,000 loans out there. They can't go every single month and check and see if that's been sold. So it usually pops up because of some error made by the parties. You know, they contacted the bank inappropriately. On one occasion, we had a weird one. Condo regime went bankrupt, changed the legal description of every single condo in there, and that triggered the lender. So that was a completely innocent event. But the ones that I've heard of is some type of error or silliness by the parties.
Yeah.
So bottom line, the bank just wants to get paid.
Yeah.
They want their money.
That's it. So I remember hearing about this. I went to my very first note conference in 2009. And they must have been talking about subject twos. I didn't know what any of that meant at the time. But I remember them, somebody, whoever was speaking on stage said, you know, somebody asked the question about due on sale. What do you do about that? Blah, 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 blah. And the speaker said, how many people have ever dealt with that? And like two hands went up in a crowd of 200 people. And I'm like, oh, okay. So it's not really a thing. Okay. And that was it, and move on. And over the years, I've heard this come up time and time again. And again, then you say, okay, how many people have ever dealt with this? And, you know, 3 in 8,000. Yeah. So it's extremely rare. Yeah. As an investor, I deal in probabilities. So it's extremely rare. Yeah. It's not something I'm concerned about.
So Nathan, we did have a question linked in regarding from Randy. What is your buying criteria, or what's attractive to you? I'm not sure if we have that answer. That's a very vague question. So Randy, if you can clarify in the chat there, I appreciate it and whatnot. So we talked about the fact that there's no way to protect it. Sohal asked, you know, deed back to the seller and back again to the buyer. I think what you meant is sell it back to the original borrower,
yeah,
who sold you the property, and then deed it right back to the person you sold it to. So Sohal, hopefully that kind of clears it up. So it's interesting, right? Because we've heard all the different ways to avoid it. And you're right. Most people don't have that problem, but I like the fact you have a fix. Right. When we look at this stuff, we had another question from Liz Pryors. What's the best way to hold title in a personal name, a business entity, or a trust name? Is there a way you suggest people?
Yeah.
So A lot of states have passed some legislation that allows what's called a series LLC. I don't know if y'all have it or not.
Yeah.
But you know, entity selection process is in theory supposed to be a person and a business specific review. However, 999 times out of 1,000, you're going to end up with an attorney saying, "All right, Mr. Investor, a series LLC is best for you," mm-hmm. which allows you to separate your properties. So you've got a property that has $200,000 equity. Yep. You've got a rental property that has no equity, but you know, you have high liability of people falling down, getting hurt, suing you, what have you. You separate those two into different little sub-series. I call them sub-entities. It's not actually that, but for all intents and purposes, you've got your series LLC, and then you can create little sub-LLCs under those. So that's the best entity in my opinion.
So we had a question from Wayne Garrett over on LinkedIn. Have you ever had a previous seller blow up a sub two and deal with a couple of years later? They remarried and wanted to buy another house, and then they told the bank they sold it to you, or you know,
that's
that situation come up?
Yeah, that's a fantastically intuitive question. When I said that the three that occurred were some type of inappropriate contact, one was that exact same scenario that from the question. He hit the nail on the head. So I call it the hugging your enemy and pulling the pin theory. He contacted the bank and asked the bank to foreclose because he sold his property.
Wow. How'd you resolve it?
It was moving towards litigation. The investor paid off the underlying mortgage, and that kind of took the wind out of the sails of the fella. But the other half of the question that was asked, what's intended there is, hey, seller now wants to go buy a house. Average guy can't get two mortgages, so we have mortgage one on his credit reporting. But one of the more important reasons we draft up a promissory note is because that seller can take that promissory note over to a lender, show anywhere between 6 and 12 months of timely payments, and that debt to income ratio issue, the debt of that is now removed from his credit at least 80%, depends on the lender, somewhere between 70 and 90%. So that fixes the debt to income ratio. So when we have that problem, you know, we get the phone call, seller says, "You were supposed to pay this off." I say, "Well, there were 19 different disclosures where you said you understood it was a wrap. I don't think that's really what you're intending here. Are you trying to get another mortgage?" And then we educate them, "Hey, you don't have to pay this off. Here's how to fix your DTIs." So that does happen occasionally.
Awesome. That's good stuff. So we wanted to touch upon a few things for the note buyers out there too, right? So when you create this, are you creating a second lien on the property, this wrap note? Can you describe what that wrap note looks like? Is it a second lien? Is it a 1B? How does that look in the county records?
So Wells Fargo is going to be that first lien position on that property, whether it's a sub two acquisition or if someone's purchasing via mortgage wrap.
Let's just use some quick numbers here, right? So we have $150,000 first lien, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and we wrap it with $200,000. So we have a $50,000 difference. Go ahead. Sorry.
That's perfect. Yep. I mean, a sub two is if you bought it for $150,000, exactly what's owed. A wrap is like you just described, a bigger note around a smaller note. So the wrap note is going to be a second lien position. And that's the way we did it for years and years and years and years. But now folks are coming in and saying, "Hold on a second, I may want to just sell the $50,000, the equity in there." So they're creating two notes, the $150,000 sub two note. And this is usually investors selling the property, the $150,000 sub two note, but now another third lien of the $50,000 seller carry back note, so that we can now sell that equity and not have to get rid of the entire sub two portion.
So if I'm doing my math correct, and this is one of the questions we had in the very beginning in January, if I add up $200,000 plus the $150,000, is a total debt on that property $350,000?
If the escrow officer doesn't know what she's doing, then the answer is okay. Yeah. And so I just now, we get phone calls all the time, you know, hey, y'all closed a file, but there's a lien that y'all didn't get released. You need to get that lien released. And they just don't understand that $150,000 lien stays there. So if you fast forward to the ending of a wrap, so someone's refinancing or they're selling the house, everything just starts rolling back down to where, okay, investor, I'm owed $200,000, and you provide that payoff to the escrow officer, but you also get Wells Fargo $150,000. They have to understand, they have to net that out. They're not paying out $350,000. They're paying out $200,000 broken up between the $150,000 and $50,000.
So technically it's a second lien, but it's written up that it incorporates the $150,000. So the only part of that technically is a $50,000 second, would you say it's correct? Or is it technically a $150,000 and a $200,000?
I say the $200,000 incorporates and subsumes that $150,000.
Okay.
So I like to look at it as we really just have one big lien for $200,000. And then it's broken up between the $150,000 and the $50,000 that's owed to the buyer.
So it's second lien, but kind of.
it's I mean, it's definitely from a legal standpoint, it is absolutely a second lien.
Sure.
Yep. From a you know, numbers standpoint, it's a net $50,000 second lien.
Right.
So if I go ahead and I buy your wrap note, right, and we pay off the first, what happens to that $200,000 wrap note? Does it subtract $150,000 off, or does it stay $200,000?
It stays $200,000. So, you know,
you're the note buyers. You can buy this wrap note for, say, you know, for $150,000. If this number is $150,000 and the wrap is $300,000, and you give that person $175,000, and they have a $300,000 wrap note on it, and you buy that for $300,000 note for $175,000, give them $25,000 in their pockets, pay off that first. You just bought a $300,000 first lien for $175,000. Just saying. Yeah. At 10-12%. Just saying.
That's my favorite. That's I've always been a first guy. I understand seconds. It's not really something I'm generally interested in. This, like I say, from a practical standpoint, from a legal standpoint, it's a second. From a practical standpoint, it's not exactly a second. But I still prefer that first position. So that would be my preference, is to pay off that underlying first. But yeah, it's an interesting situation.
And right now we're doing hypothecation, which means lending money to borrowers or to lenders who have a note in their hand, and we're typically giving them enough money to pay off the underlying lien to move us to first, right? And give them capital, right? Most people have equity in their position and they're just trying to cash it out, which is awesome. And nothing changes in the world of what we're doing. Now, we've talked about Dodd-Frank a little bit here. What is the rule of thumb? If, let's say there's people out here who created a subject to and they did a wrap note and everything else, but they didn't underwrite the borrower. They didn't do the DTI and the ability to repay. Is there a way to fix it? And B, we've heard about this thing about a 3-year window that if it's been 3 years, it doesn't need to be underwritten.
Now, I don't know about a 3-year window, but in term from a legal perspective, there's no fix. From y'all's world, there could be a fix. You go in and you start trying to go through that ability to repay or Dodd-Frank analysis, get an RMLO. So business-wise, you can fix it. Law-wise, you can't. And that's actually in Texas, the new legislation that was passed was Dodd-Frank wasn't very toothy. Didn't bite you if you didn't comply really too much. Our new Senate Bill 43 amended property code and finance code, you don't comply, and they come in and unwind the deal for you.
What's that look like? It's not
pretty. Strictly speaking, it means that you pay back everything that the buyer has paid you, and you get the property back with some fines associated with it. So it's toothy. And then it also tucks it in If you don't provide the 7-day disclosure before closing, for example, that's a Deceptive Trade Practices Act violation, which now brings you up to 3 times damages that's allowed. So this one's toothy. We're a little bit more respectful of it.
So I hope that your group and your tribe is listening, because that right there is killer.
So Dave and I have talked to plenty of people that are doing seller finance, creative finance, and often we get response like, "What? You can't tell me what to do, and you know they can't tell me what to sell for. They can't."
I don't have to underwrite it. I don't use servicer. I don't need.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we had the Federal SAFE Act and the Texas, the T-SAFE Act, Dodd-Frank, and those, there wasn't penalty like there is now in Texas. And you can get in trouble under Dodd-Frank. They can bring that in. There's just no Dodd-Frank police. And all of these things that we're talking about, the problem occurs when there's a default.
Right.
So if everything's fine, everything's fine. Right. But you have a defaulting borrower. I always say we're very, very polite foreclosing lenders. We're working with them. We're going through loss mitigation. We're helping them out because A, we're nice people. We have honor. And B, we don't want to get stuck with a microscope looking down at our documents.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we definitely want to make sure we do this. So Casey asked a question on LinkedIn. Isn't it technically a third lien when your end buyers are wrapped? The first is Wells Fargo. The second is deed of trust from the investor buyer to a third. And I think Julia made the comment that we need a whiteboard, and I completely agree with Julia, right? So Casey, I'm trying to dissect your question here, my man. Third lien to your, so if you do an 80-20 loan, technically it's a second and a third. So you take three liens on that property. Wells Fargo is the second, the first is Wells Fargo, second is deed of trust from the investor, buyer to the seller, and third is from the end buyer to the investor. Casey, I'm not sure if I followed the question.
No, Casey's doing great. She can move to the front of the class.
Yeah. So, I think so I apologize, Casey. I'll definitely wrap up with Alan and get that back to you. So that's cool stuff. But this field is amazing, right? And we do all this stuff and all this kind of cool creative financing and go around the system. And those people who are originating these things, you know, creating a wrap note takes a lot of effort. Finding that buyer is key, right? Find the property is key. What do you tell people who are saying, I'm just getting started with the subject to world? How do you find the asset? How do you find the property? How do you find the borrower? What's your typical strategy?
You can go out and market specifically for this, and you're going to be looking at the foreclosures, looking at probate properties where there's a deceased owner, looking at properties that are both for sale and lease, vacant rental properties and things that, so you can certainly market for it. And there's, you know, a lot of folks who do, and they're doing great. What I usually say is, just make sure you understand this, you've mastered it enough so that you know what's going on. So when you see it, and that's really actually all that I do. I call it opportunistic investing. It's just one of the arrows that we have. Hey, Mr. Seller, we want to buy your house. All right, you don't have much equity in it. You don't have enough to even sell this thing and pay commissions. All right, well, we're going to move this over to a seller finance transaction. So you're looking for them when they occur at minimum, but you can go market. I don't like the foreclosure list because that means the vultures are already out there looking.
Yeah.
So I want pre-foreclosure or pre-foreclosure, 30, 60, 90 day late lists. There's ways to find them, but very, very important to understand it. So when it comes up, you see it and then you take the advantage of the opportunity.
So Nathan, we had a question from Drake on Facebook here.
I was going to throw that one to you.
I know. So what I actually just recently came across from a note seller who wanted to sell something. I'm not sure if Brian's on, but so someone came up with the idea that they did a split note. They did a subject to, and now they have seller finance note, and they split it 50-50, and they sold the property, and it's 50% ownership of that note. how we buy it. So I'm going to tell you my strategy. I'll let Nathan speak on his strategy. Is what we're doing right now is we're figuring a way out that you buy out your partner, and then we give you enough money to pay off the first. I can't buy 50% of your note, because then if the borrower default, you default, I'm now JV with your other partner. And that just doesn't work because I don't know the other partner, and that's just not how I do business. So it makes it dirty. So what we were doing in our strategy, we're buying a note from someone. We're actually doing a hypothecation with that person. We're lending money. Is we're working on a strategy that they sell 50%, their 50% of shares to their partner. So they have 100% ownership there. We fund a hypothecation to pay off their first lien. And then you sit there and you pay us that wrap note payment. It's a little higher than what you're making, but you only have it for 10 years, right? And after 10 years, it's done. You collect for the next 20 years. So Nathan, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, for me, the same thing. I would need 100% ownership. The 50% thing, that throws me, because like you say, then I'm now a partner with somebody that I don't know. Yeah. And I'm not very comfortable with that. So I'd have to get 100%.
So Alan, what are some of the biggest mistakes you're seeing from people who are getting involved, or even experienced people with the subject to and then the selling lease option, wrap, deed of trust, whatever entity they created in land contract for those outside Texas? What are the biggest issues or concerns you're finding people?
So I always say the due on sale clause is the most talked about issue in regard to mortgage wrap and least seen occurrence in the wild out there. Insurance is the biggest obstacle we need to get over, the homeowner's insurance, because you have a situation where, you know, Wells Fargo is looking to see that their borrower is the owner and the insured of that property. Yet we're sending up a declaration, declaration page from the insurance company that says, you know, Bob Buyer is now the insured. And so the insurance needs to be done correctly. While I say there's been 3 out of 8,000 issues in regard to due on sale, there's been dozens and dozens and dozens of insurance issues. So So I always say, if Aunt Betty's been doing your insurance and she has your car and your house and everything, she's not doing this one. You're getting someone who knows what they're doing, knows how to structure that that declaration page, so that the person receiving that at the mortgage company doesn't fail to check off a box. So that's the biggest issue. Everything else we can deal with.
That's a big one. That's a huge one, because I was reading about it. Is like, how do you structure that insurance on that property without triggering the bank that there's a bunch of payees, right?
I can tell you what I can parrot the words from my go-to insurance folks. Sellers canceling their insurance because you can't insure a property you don't own. Mm-hmm. Buyers getting new insurance and they're the insured. Mortgage company obviously has to be the mortgagee clause over there. They need to see themselves, but the seller, the borrower for Wells Fargo, they're going to be an additional interest versus additional insured. Now that's the limit of my understanding of that. I let the experts take care of it, but yeah. That's what he's told me.
Yeah. So interesting
for me as a lender, you know, as I become a lender, then I just do forced placed insurance. So whether the borrower has got insurance or not, or whether they're current or not, I'm covered. I personally consider it just a cost of doing business. And so I just have everything insured regardless of whatever's happening with the borrower. Just to be absolutely sure, I want to make sure that if something happens, I'm covered.
That's smart. Cause I can see insurance companies coming in and saying, hey, this is a reason that we're going to not allow this claim. Mm-hmm. They're wrong, but I don't know if y'all know this. Sometimes insurance companies deny claims that are actually rightful.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Frustrations. So this big world of owner finance subject to is very critical. I presume you tell people to talk to your attorney, and not a lot of attorneys understand this world. What typical attorney should they look for, right? If they're outside Texas, outside different areas, that what should they look for in an attorney to draft up this paperwork?
So I'm not self-promoting, I promise, But yeah, you need to have knowledge, both the legal knowledge and the title knowledge. So someone can understand these things forward and backward from a legal standpoint, but not understand what the title office underwriters are looking for, and vice versa. So an attorney owned title office is called a fee office in Texas. You want an attorney that's in the title world, who's also rolling their sleeves up and working in this area. My suggestion on how to find someone like that is you just go over to the to a Facebook networking, create a finance page, and say, hey, who has an attorney referral? And you're going to get a half dozen real quick.
Well said. Yeah, and we're streaming live in about 8 groups, so feel free to comment in this group and promote it. Thank you to Brian, Nick, and a bunch of other people who have let me stream directly into the groups, because we're trying to educate everyone, right? As note buyers, we want to make sure you create it correctly so we can buy it. Nathan and I both buy notes forever and hypothecate and everything else. So we definitely want to talk about that. The insurance part of it, I would definitely recommendations for that. Just post in the Facebook group, go to Alan's stuff. In the pinned comment, you should see Alan's information. You can definitely reach out by creating that form up. But I would ask for the recommendations to be put into the groups and ask questions there. I want to also
Do you guys work outside of Texas or just Texas?
Only close in Texas. I certainly speak with people, educate what have you in regard to mortgage wraps and general contracting, structuring and exit strategies, et cetera. But okay, I don't pass the boundary of Texas because my law license stops there.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Right. So one last question for me, and then I'll let Nathan go with his. When we're looking to help people who are creating notes, right, and they say that they want to do a subject to, and they need a little bit of cash to give that subject to seller, as well as sit there and get some cash flow before they find their buyer. We want to create a second lien for them for 36 months or so. Do we have to go through the underwriting process? Do we have to go through all that process of creating that note and doing it the bill you pay? Or can I just write a business-to-business note from me to Nathan that says I'm going to give him a $30,000 lien on that property? Do I need to do any other additional paperwork or use an RMLO in that state?
So you're like you said, B2B. The laws are governing residential loans. And so your analysis is just your normal analysis. Is my position secure enough? And does the borrower have some liquidity if they default? So you're just going through your normal analysis of due diligence versus any kind of that, any of the RMLO stuff.
Yeah. So this is awesome, guys, right? So if you guys are doing 72s and you need some cash for that, for that seller, right? And you sit there and say, listen, I need some cash flow, rehab the property maybe, and go ahead and borrow from us, right? We're going to charge you 130% rate of interest rate, right? And you just get your property going. I'm kidding on the interest rate. It's only 129. But what we can do is you're going to get that cash you need to give to your subject to, right? We create the second, and then you're going to go ahead and get that borrower. We understand that you may pay it off sooner or not, but we can lend that money in position. But understand our criteria is be very, very tight, meaning we're not going to do CLTV. So it's the collective loan to value. I'm not going to do above 65%. Just not going to do it, especially in today's market. But if you have a lot of equity and you can make things happen, we can give you a second $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to hold over, and we can amortize it, making maybe look at the interest-only situation and that kind of stuff for maybe a year, 2 or 3 or 5 years and make it happen for you guys. So just keep that eyes open. And Alan, is there any problem with doing something like that? Is that a great avenue for those people who need that extra money to just kind of a bridge loan?
No problem at all. And, you know, 7 years ago, didn't really see it. Now it's pervasive.
Yeah. This is a huge world. Note buyers, we've been doing webinars. This is awesome stuff, guys. It is massive as I dive into it. I thought tapes and notes were big. We're seeing more and more inventory. This kind of stuff is a little bit different. I'm not going to say hairy. It's just a little different than getting a list of assets from, you know, our favorite hedge funds. But I'm going to tell you, you're going to get a better pricing. So maybe you shouldn't shop there. Just leave me and Nathan to buy stuff. Right. So this world is crazy, right? And we're learning a lot about it. And I think that You guys have been such a good way to go through things, and your groups are really, really awesome to be part of. We encourage you guys, reach out to Alan, reach out to the Facebook group, but also we put a pin post in there to reach out to Alan, ask questions. His team is awesome. So we encourage you guys, follow Alan, look at some stuff, but understand Alan is one person. He can't respond to everything, right? He's got to do a job as well. It's been a fun time. So Nathan, let you ask your favorite word.
We're always curious here. You know, we're all trying to predict the future and see what's coming down the pipe. So from your perspective with, you know, you've seen even from a year ago, your response on who's doing subject twos is different and who's selling in that way. So with what you've seen, even just over the last 12 months, where do you think we're heading?
I think we're heading in the same direction. And what I mean by that is we're in a kind of a unique situation where sellers want to sell via seller finance and take advantage of their interest rates. Buyers want to buy seller finance and avoid the high interest rates. And we haven't seen that in 20, 30 years or so. Mm-hmm. I'm going to project out here, absolute guesses. That's going to continue going forward for most of 24. In my opinion, I think things will start normalizing, but I'll tell you, there's no time that mortgage wraps aren't a good solution in several different areas. So you need the tool, you need the arrow in your bag back there for when it occurs. But I think we're going to keep on the same increased incidence of mortgage wraps and sub twos out there for another year or so.
That's awesome.
That's very good. Yeah, we're excited. Amazing. This has been a great learning experience for us and a new avenue to explore.
So for those who are note buyers and sellers, if you want to give information to us, I have a website. Nathan, you can reach out to Nathan too. I have a specific website where you can find a bunch of FAQs, questions, webinars, everything else. I put it in the chat, but just go to Earnest Investing or JKP Holdings. There is a spot where you can sell your note and get some information to us. We can give you a quote and talk about some strategies because we're buying these things regularly. We have tons of cash ready to deploy. For note buyers, we'll be running our 5-week course coming September. So stay tuned for more details. You can go to our Facebook, my website, and go to the advanced education that in September, we'll be talking more about this stuff in our advanced course. And we'll be looking to hold some daily kind of events with some of the top people here to learn more about, for note buyers and note sellers, how you can strategize to get the good return, but also on both sides. If I'm giving you, I'm charging you, a 20% return, but you can go make 50% because I gave you money, it makes sense. So don't be fixated on our interest rate, because I guarantee you probably can double it with more money, right? So that's awesome. So we're going to disconnect live and do some after talk, but I appreciate everyone who's jumped on, spent some time with us this Friday afternoon. And Alan, we have to thank you, man. It's been awesome chatting with you. We've heard so much good things about you, and you've lived up to that fame.
Well, I appreciate it. No, I appreciate y'all. And I think I need to attend a little bit more of y'all's events and learn y'all's side of things.
So Nathan has something coming up. Nathan, get a plug it before we disconnect for next year.
So actually two things. So I was just thinking here while you were talking, our advanced class, I think this would be a great thing for people that are creating notes. Jump in, because you've got a base knowledge of what notes are. Let us add to that, because man, we can do a lot. We can do a lot more together. And if we can understand each other's businesses better, man, we can do a lot. Now, that being said, that's my plug for that. So check that out. I think that's going to be well worth your time and money on that.
Yeah.
Other than that, I run a Diversified Mortgage Expo. We are locked in next year for May 31st and June 1st in Nashville. And really excited about that. This last year was just a fantastic conference. Everybody loved it, myself included. It was just a great, great experience. So we're looking forward to having more of the seller finance crew out there. Come meet note buyers. Come see how we can work together, because I guarantee you there are many ways that we can work together. We can make a lot of money together.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Alan, again, I'm going to disconnect live. Hang on for a minute. I appreciate everyone. Joseph, we'll get you in there, my man. I know you're part of our weekly call, so I'll get you in there, bud. So thank you again, Alan. I'm going to stop the feed and we'll go. Again, this will be streamed on YouTube and all the good stuff. So be well, everyone. Enjoy your Friday afternoon.
Thanks again, Alan.